It's Inside Out. I'm Damon Rose. With me is Lee Kumutat.
Hello.
And Kathleen Hawkins.
Hello.
The Ouch team. And Ouch team, congratulations to all of you because, and if you haven't seen us tweeting about it yet, you may not know that we won the Online Media Award in the category for Best Media Podcast on Wednesday night. Woohoo!
Yay! Such good news.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. We've been doing it for almost 10 years now.
Yeah,
almost 10 years. And so it's really good to be validated in that way. We're pleased, aren't we?
Yeah. Really pleased. It's just really nice to know that what you're doing is recognised and appreciated.
Yeah, it is. Can we talk about the last main monthly podcast that we did? So we had a bunch of comedians in the studio. You may remember, I don't know if you've heard it yet. It's well worth a listen if you haven't heard it yet. We had Felicity Ward, who's an Australian comedian, has a lot of anxiety and irritable bowel syndrome. We had Harriet Dyer.
Who I realised I have seen on an episode of Dinner Date.
The reality, what is it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's three people and they all have to cook for one person. And then at the end, that one person decides who they want to take out on a date. And when you had Harriet Dyer on and I saw some pictures, I thought, God, I recognise her. And then I just put two and two together and it was from Dinner Date.
Because you weren't here on that studio recording, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was in Brazil. Lucky me.
She was great. I really need to get up to Manchester and see and watch her. Mental health night that she does like that. It's fantastic.
Very funny.
Felicity Ward was with us in the studio and we did a recording. It was great. Adair Dipperton was there. He's brilliant. We were all saying goodbye to each other. And right at the end, Felicity Ward came up to me and she was saying, okay, well, thanks very much. Thanks for having me in, Damon. And there was this sort of thing where I noticed, and I do notice this as someone who can't see, even though I can't see, I can tell what people are doing in front of me. And I sort of kept feeling that she was going in a bit closer. And I was thinking, what is going on here? Is she trying to give me an air hug here? And I didn't want to reciprocate because if I got it wrong, it would have been a bit rubbish, wouldn't it?
You know, lunging in for a hug.
Just lunging in to hug someone.
Anyways, I like an unannounced hug there.
Yeah, me too. I would have said go for it.
So I didn't do anything. We just said goodbye. And because she'd been so open about her irritable bowel syndrome and things like that on the podcast, I emailed her later and thanked her for coming and said, oh, by the way, there was that moment, wasn't there, at the end when I think you were coming in for a bit of an air hug, weren't you? I said, I'm really sorry I didn't respond because, you know, I can get it badly wrong sometimes. And she wrote back and she said, no, I wasn't going in for an air hug.
So what was happening?
So it,
just sidling a little bit closer.
So was it a handshake or what?
I was left slightly embarrassed. I was thinking, oh no, I've now actually really opened it up, and so I felt a little bit embarrassed. But no, it did turn out she was trying for a handshake, but I wasn't responding, and it was all getting a bit embarrassing. And I didn't know her body language. She didn't want to invade my personal space, and that's what happened.
Oh no!
Oh dear. Never mind.
You should have just stretched your arms out and just seen what happened, seeing if she'd just come in for a big bear hug.
That's what I'd do.
But silliness aside, we're going to go on to talk about the accident at Alton Towers last week. The Smiler Ride crashed. A number of people were hurt. And this week we heard that Leah Washington, one of the people who was injured, had to have her leg amputated, which was one of those really unpleasant moments. And we know that the people at Alton Towers are pretty devastated by all these events. But we wanted to talk about amputation. Over to you, Kathleen, who you are
Token amputee in the studio.
Congratulations, well done for getting here.
Thanks.
What can you tell us about this process then of going through an amputation? What will she be doing? She's just a few days on from her amputation.
Well, there was an article during the week saying Leah Washington's recovering well. She stood up for the first time. And some of my friends said to me, how is she standing up for the first time? This is like a day after she's had her leg amputated. How is she possibly standing up? And I mean, I obviously can't speak for Leah's situation, but when I lost both of my legs, I was a similar age to Leah, actually. I was 18 and she's 17. I'm a double amputee, but I had one amputated about a month before the second one. And so after that first amputation, the physiotherapist came in the next day and said, right, you're getting up today. And I didn't want to at all. I was in pain. And the emotional ordeal of kind of looking down at where your leg used to be for the first time and it not being there is really, really stark and is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life. And I can only imagine that for Leah, it's the same. I mean, you're on a lot of drugs, and so I think it's very difficult to process exactly how you feel during that situation. And it's something that you can reflect back on and feel extremely differently about. But the physical process is the physios come in and they say, right, we're getting you up. And so they got me on crutches and my other leg had hardly any sensation in it. And from what I've read, I don't think Leah's other leg is severely injured or has much injury to it. So I presume that they got her up on crutches. It's a good thing to get the circulation going, especially post-amputation, because you get a lot of fluid build-up in the residual stump and they put a drip in to get rid of that excess fluid.
So for you, when did the emotional impact hit, do you think, really hit?
When I was told that I was going to have my leg amputated, the first one, I was devastated, but it was more of a shock rather than a real processing of that information. But Leah's brother has said, I don't know where she's finding the strength from. And people said that to me at the time throughout the whole hospital process. You are so institutionalised. There is such a routine around you. There are physios coming in. There are people coming to talk to you about prosthetic legs straight away that you don't have time to process it. So it wasn't until I moved back to my parents' house and really started to kind of digest what had happened. And my parents were carrying me to the toilet and I was in a wheelchair. And so it was then that I began to really process what had happened and that this was my reality now. But I'm really, really pleased to hear that Leah is doing well from her brother. And I hope that that continues, because that is such a great thing if she decides to walk with a prosthetic, which I only can assume that she will, given her age and her level of fitness, that I hope that she keeps that motivation and that positivity, because it's a long rehabilitation process, learning to walk again. And she is an above knee amputee. And so that comes with a whole host of other issues where you need to learn to walk with a knee that could be computerized. Or if you don't go for that, then there's a lot more movement needs to come from the hip.
Below knee amputations are easier to deal with, are they?
Yes, they are. I mean, I'm a double below knee amputee, so I have to walk with both. So, I mean, it's very, very difficult to compare double below knee amputee to one above knee amputee, and I wouldn't want to do that. But losing your knee is quite a big thing.
And how long for you, I know it will be different for everybody, but how long for you did it take for you to sort of be able to walk?
It really wasn't long at all. So to begin with, they get you up in they get you up in parallel bars and they put like an old Second World War looking inflatable balloon around the end of your stump with a grey metallic frame that you then slot that into. And so then you can weight bear on that because it's a big inflatable like balloon that's around your leg. So you can't really feel the pain. And so then you can weight bear. So that just gets you used to bearing weight. And then it's about going for your first casting, your first limb fitting, which can take a couple of weeks, and then getting up with your prosthetic leg. But I was walking within, I can remember I had my legs amputated in the February and March, and then it was one of my best friend's birthdays in the June, and so I went on a night out with my prosthetic limbs on in the June.
I do think as we said, you've just come back from holidays, and I loved that you took three pairs of legs on your holiday.
So I was in quite a lot of pain before I went on holiday because I'd unluckily taken all the skin off of my knee. So I was uncomfortable, and so I needed a backup pair of comfy legs. And I also had to take waterproof legs with me to go in the sea and the swimming pool.
Excess baggage?
You can get excess baggage. I managed to cram them into my suitcases because I was going to Brazil. Again, lucky me. I was allowed to take a lot of baggage anyway. And so I just put them in my suitcases. But I do sometimes think, oh, if my suitcases go missing or if there's damage to them, then it's going to be a loss for a while before getting them back. But the waterproof legs are amazing. because I get in the pool and they fill up, so they haven't got the metal pole in them. They fill up with water and then I get out of the pool and there's a little hole in the back and all of the water just drains out in one sudden flow.
Well, I get to feel them because we're going swimming next week, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to go swimming together.
Yeah,
you definitely will.
Oh, well.
I wasn't invited.
Open invitation, Dave.
Was it? Really?
Ladies only.
I think maybe I won't take you up on that, but thanks anyway. So that's Leah, and I'm sure we'll hear more about how she's getting on in the press. But talking of traumatic events, Lee, you've had a rather traumatic event in recent weeks in a different way. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, probably in comparison, not that traumatic, but for me it was quite traumatic, yes. I had my phone snatched out of my hand as I was blithely walking along, taking the long route home on a lovely sunny evening, thinking, oh, I'll have a leg stretch for me and my guide dog. I'm just walking along and had my phone out because I was checking my GPS app, which talks to me to make sure that I was knew which cross street I needed to turn up. And some young people, three of them, I believe, walking towards me, just decided that it was an opportunistic thing and just grabbed it out of my hand.
So shocking. I still can't believe that happened to you.
Well, see, the thing is, it is shocking at the time. I just started to yell a lot and yell after them in order to try and draw attention to what had happened, really, because there were people around and I'm sure that people didn't see it, but if I started yelling, then something might happen. And in fact, a bunch of people did chase them down the street and managed to corner one of them and hung on to them until the police came. But unfortunately, he wasn't the one that had the phone. And the police were using the Find My iPhone app to watch it go up the street. And they did deploy people to, some officers to try and find the other two, but they were unsuccessful. But it does seem to happen to a lot of people. And what was interesting for me, I mean, there were lots of interesting things. I was absolutely fine for a few days and then I had a complete and utter meltdown and have needed some counselling since then.
When I told some of my friends what had happened to you and that you were with your guide dog and that you're blind, they were shocked that somebody would steal from a blind person. And I would never want to kind of patronise or offend anybody by saying that, but I think it is perhaps a human instinct to think, well, don't steal from somebody who can't see, because the impact on that person is going to be a lot more. They can't see what you're doing.
And that was what, when I was waiting on this street corner and I could hear people yelling and people running, and a few people came up to me and said, we don't want this kind of thing in our community, we want people like you to be able to walk safely in our streets. And that was the feeling that I did get. But I think the other thing is the impact it's had on me, because my phone is so much more than a phone, is way more than I expected. For example, wanting to know exactly what colour shirt I'm wearing in the morning, I often take a photo of myself and use an app to have that picture described, and I can't do that. So my poor old housemates at the moment are kind of is this the right shirt? Am I wearing the right thing? So it has had a much bigger impact than I expected it to.
I saw recently someone wrote a blog post about this word vulnerability, and I seem to be hearing this quite a lot more. Disabled people often talked about as vulnerable people. I never used to like that. But incidents like this, when you do think to yourself, actually, I am that little bit more vulnerable, aren't I?
I know, but I rail against that as well. Somebody sort of said to me, you really need to understand that you are more vulnerable. But what do you do with that information? What do you do with it? Do you stop going out? Okay, there are probably things that one could do, i.e. keep your phone in your handbag, use your earbuds. But if you're blind, that also can have safety implications as well. So what do you do? Why do we need to accept that we're vulnerable?
I walk around London and I assume that I'm less likely to be attacked because I'm blind. I think this might be completely the wrong attitude. But I'm really quite happy sort of walking along at night times.
Me too.
And I feel fairly safe. And I do think it's interesting, isn't it? What is the mentality of people who are in the mind for mugging somebody and need some money, for instance? Are they going to look at a visually impaired person and think, oh, they're much easier to mug and they won't be able to be a proper witness at the police station. They won't be able to give me, you know, to do a photo fit or anything along those lines. Mm. Are they thinking that? Or are they thinking, oh, actually, do you know, that's even going a little bit too far for me. I don't think I'll touch this. This would look bad.
I don't know, but I like to think the fact that I yelled and screamed my head off and a whole, you know, load of people came chasing after them might make them think, you know, before doing it again. And I'm very grateful to those people who did actually try to come to my aid and did what they could.
Well, thank you, everybody. I think we're going to wrap up now. Coming up on Ouch, bbc.co.uk/ouch. Next week, we have an article about how when deaf people become blind, they are less accepted in that deaf community, a very strong community. And also a really interesting film from Kate Monaghan, which is all about training to go to school, training on travel. So watch out for those. On Twitter, I'm at Damon Rose. Lee?
I'm at LEEK005.
And Kathleen?
And I am at cat_B_Hawkins, which I really need to change. That's so long-winded every time.
Yeah, and it's cat with a K.
It's cat with a K.
Cat with a K.
A kicking K.
You can
that was weird. For somebody who doesn't have children, that was a very weird thing to say.
Suddenly words and pictures came back into my head with Wordy floating around the screen and kings kicking and, yeah, no, oh dear, oh no, falling through a hole in time. Time to go. Email ouch@bbc.co.uk and goodbye. We're back next week.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.